With that, let me now go into the stories. The whole history of Arthur, as it occurs in Geoffrey of Monmouth. Behind Arthur is this wonderful figure, Merlin. Geoffrey of Monmouth wrote another work, a shorter work, called the Vita Merlini, the Life of Merlin. And in that life, the figure of the Druid, the Celtic magical priest, the counterpart of the Indian Brahmin, the Brahmin as the magician of the Kshatriya or warrior, so also Merlin as the magician and mystic master of the warrior princes. The life of Merlin is modeled on the image of the Druid priest, but with certain specific characters of the Arthur's time involved, particularly a man named Ambrosius, who seems to have been largely responsible for overthrowing Vortigern, who was the traitor to England, so forth and so on. The story of Merlin is, briefly, of a boy whose mother had conceived him of a devil. Of course, in the Christian tradition, whenever you have a miracle that's not the miracle of God, it's the miracle of a devil. And the devils are simply the earlier deities. So you have the old story of a virgin birth. Merlin could appear either as a boy or as an old wise man. He, as a little boy, uttered a prophecy to King Vortigern, the last of the British kings, that his empire was going to collapse. And he described it in the way of an allegory. You are trying to build a tower, and he was trying to build a tower, but the tower won't stand firm because in the ground underneath are two contending dragons, a white and a red dragon. Well, these are the two races that are contending. And Merlin brought it about later that Vortigern should be defeated. Then his next work was to produce the king who would now govern the happy new world. This was going to be Arthur, the begetting of Arthur. He was to be from the house of a certain queen, Igraine. His father was to be Uther Pendragon, who was not Igraine's husband. Merlin arranged that Uther Pendragon should assume the form of Igraine's husband, and while the husband was away, have intercourse with her, she thinking it was her husband. Thus Arthur is begotten in extramarital magic. Merlin, next, has this whole theme of this, the sword in the stone. The sword is the sword of destiny. One of the great important powers recognized in early times was that of the smith to draw steel from a stone. And it is this steel of the sword that represents the virtue and triumph of whatever people were talking about. So there's this legend of the stone with the sword in it that could be drawn only by the one to whom it was destined. Merlin produces Arthur, who draws the sword. So there's the beginning of a whole context of imperial story and development. Guinevere becomes the wife of Arthur. The king of Rome, the emperor of Rome, sends a challenge to Arthur to submit to the king of Rome. Arthur arranges an expedition to go against Rome. And while Arthur is on expedition against Rome, his nephew, Mordred, seduces Guinevere and attempts to take over the throne. Before conquering Rome, therefore, Arthur is called back, gives battle to Mordred. Mordred is killed, Arthur mortally wounded, and carried off to Avalon. That's the whole history of Arthur. You see there the germ of what comes up later in the Lancelot story with Mordred. Only Lancelot is an honorable man and simply caught in this invincible passion, and which Arthur recognizes as something even more, well, I'm going ahead of the story, even more important and sacred than marriage itself. In this earlier view, Guinevere is cursed, Guinevere is downgraded, and the female does not have the celebration and value that she has in the later stories. So much for the story of Arthur. That's as it comes up in the History of the Kings of Britain, in Wasse's Brute, and in Lehrman. Now the stories go to the continent. There are certain bards whose names we know. There's one named Bleheris, and there's another, it seems, named Kiot, to whom the stories have been attributed. In medieval story writing, there is not free invention. There is what is called the matter, and there is what is called the sense. The poet takes the matter and interprets it in his sense. So the matter of the Arthurian romances was brought to the French courts by the Celtic bards, transmuted from Celtic story, and then picked up by writers and turned into a literary form. To summarize very briefly again, the period of Arthur in the 5th and 6th and 7th centuries, the early chronicles telling of his life, the oral tradition of the Hope of the Kings of Britain, the writing of Geoffrey of Monmouth of the History of the Kings of Britain, then the coming of bards, Celtic bards, to the French court, celebrating old Celtic tales as though they were knightly tales, linking the knights of their tales to the court of Arthur, and these tales then, finally, at the end of the 12th century, being turned into French and German. The German Tristan and Parsifal are the great works of the Middle Ages. They're the top ones. Gottfried of Strasbourg's Tristan, Wolfram von Eschenbach's Parsifal. And it's of those two that I want to speak this afternoon. The Tristan of Gottfried and the Parsifal of Wolfram. And they will take up our whole afternoon.
You have been listening to The Arthurian Tradition, the third talk in Series 1, Volume 6 of the Joseph Campbell Audio Collection. This lecture's catalog in the Joseph Campbell Archive is L173. This release was produced by the Joseph Campbell Foundation as part of the collected works of Joseph Campbell. Robert Walter, Executive Editor, and David Cudler, Managing Editor. It was originally engineered by Mark Watts for release on Highbridge Audio. Additional engineering has been provided by Jimmy Maxwell and by Robert Maxwell of JMO Incorporated. Our theme music is by Richard Patterson and Verb Studio. For further information about this lecture, the works of Joseph Campbell and the Joseph Campbell Foundation, please visit us on the World Wide Web at jcf.org. I'm Maura Vaughan. Thank you for listening.